Merci. So, hi, this is Textilize 101. I'm Linus, as already mentioned. And as also already mentioned, this is a very, very broad topic. I've shortened this talk so many times. This will be a very rough overview of like the majority of things. If you have questions, please feel free to ask. So, why? Basically, I like Textilize. I like to talk about Textilize. And at the same time, I do dabble in a lot of like textile crafts. I would also call myself a jack of some trades and a master of none. And there will be some further reading and watching suggestions towards the end if you actually want to learn more about these topics as well. So, well, let's start. What even is a textile? That is a very good question. I could actually not answer that myself, so I went to the dictionary. And Merriam-Webster says, fiber, filament, or yarn used in making cloth. Other sources tell you that a textile can be woven, non-woven, which also sometimes includes hides, silicone, latex, stuff like that, or knit. This is also not very helpful because that's just as broad as everything before. So let's start at the beginning. Fiber. What is a fiber? Even worse, once again, encyclopedia it is. And it says, basic unit of raw material having suitable length, pliability, and strength for conversion into yarns and fabrics. Once again, that's pretty much everything, and that's essentially what it is. If it's bendy enough and like thin and long enough, it's probably a fiber, or can be used as one. However, since we're going to be talking about textiles and non-like technical fibers, such as, I don't know, insulation, there will be like the mention of both natural and semi-synthetic or synthetic fibers, natural fibers mostly being plant and animal fibers. Mineral fibers are not really used for textiles, but there's other fun stuff like asbestos, which people did use to make blankets. There's pictures of people sitting with their family in front of like a fireplace and being like, oh yes, this asbestos blanket is so amazing, it does not burn. Yeah. On the other hand, we also have like semi-synthetic or synthetic fibers. I will explain why there's a semi towards the end. They are mostly cellulose, protein, petroleum, and other. Other being glass fiber. If you're here because you thought this is about fiber in the networking sense, I'm very sorry, we will not be talking about that. It is fun, however, and it is still a fiber. Maybe consider staying. Starting with the first, cellulosic fibers, one of the biggest things. So many of them. Essentially, we have a bunch of different places where plants decide, like, oh yeah, I'm going to like put some long stringy things in there. And there, for example, seed fibers, which is stuff like cotton, which is by far the most popular seed fiber or like seed fiber out there. And you see the white, very like fuzzy, kind of nice thing. That's essentially cotton. That's the entire fiber, full stop. If you're looking at bast fibers, they're the inner part of the phloem, which is essentially the inner part of the bark. So essentially, you will either you know stuff about biology, or you will have actually broken that twig into like pieces at one point when it still was wet. The kind of like thing that becomes stringy and does not break off and is bendy, that's the fiber. That's essentially it. And other than that, you can also have like other places where plants decide, yeah, this is a good place to like have some more structural integrity. For example, leaf, stems, fruit, the brown thing, like stringy thing around your coconut, that's a fiber as well, coconut coir. And this is actually an agave. You can see where it's kind of rotting away, but also you can see the fiber, so I thought that was pretty cool. Now, cotton processing. And this is also the part where I should mention, I will discuss environmental impact and ethics and everything later because I just found that that's the most easy way to actually fit everything into like this short period of time. So cotton processing. How do you go from like a fiber that is actually growing on a plant and it's in a field to the like done thing, which we can actually see on the right side in figure 5, which is just a display of cotton manufacturing. Basically, you pluck the fiber, either somebody or a machine plucks the fiber. You then put it inside the cotton gin, which is essentially a machine that will try and get all of the dirt, debris, seeds, whatever away. And will then also kind of like very aggressively comb through it, which then sorts the fibers into like length and also the way it's like actually kind of like straightening out and stuff. So yeah, that's pretty much all you need to do for a cotton. Very nice, very simple. Sorry, bast fibers, not so much. Because for bast fibers, they're like the long body parts of the phloem, as mentioned before. You need to first harvest them. Then you need to do some retting, which can be done in several ways. Naturally, you would kind of like put them in some kind of like body of water and let the litter rot away and do the microbes do a thing. But essentially, you're just trying to like get the bark and like all the other layers away from the fibers. Once that's kind of like separated enough, you start the decortication process, which is essentially just like breaking away all of the rind. And once all of the rind and like other straw parts are gone, you start hackling. And yes, this is also where the verb comes from, which is essentially just a nice way of saying pretty aggressively combing through it and trying to like make it all nice and kind of like going in the same direction, also sorting it through like the different lengths. And at this point, you can also like go and prepare it for like further processing or whatever you want to do. Now, mercerization. Many of you will, or some of you maybe will have already seen this process or like this weird thing on your tag saying mercerized cotton. What is that? Well, it's mostly common in cotton and linen, but it can be done to most or like nearly all of the cellulosic fibers out there. It's essentially just like a bath made out of sodium hydroxide where you dunk either yarn or finished textile, it can be woven or anything inside. It's there to like actually help it increase the strength, luster, and dyeability. And the important thing is you actually have to do that under tension. Otherwise, there's a bit of a different outcome. And the reason why we do it is because, as you can see in the figure, at first it's all kind of like very natural looking, not very kind of like smooth and stuff. That actually helps it smoothen out the hydrogen bonds. That's a lot of chemistry I wholeheartedly do not understand, I think. However, if you have questions, I will be able to tell you where to look for because I don't think I can answer them. But it's nice, I like it. Other plants or like natural cellulosic fibers behave very similarly. So what is it about them? Well, they have very little to no elasticity. You will not be having like any stretchy materials. And they also are easily damaged by acids. At the same time, they are actually really absorbent, can be very soft, which is also nice for like people with sensitive skin or like sometimes hypoallergenic people, it depends, which is why it's nice for clothing. It has a good resistance to alkaline pH, high temperature, detergent. Pretty much it's fine as long as you don't try to like destroy it purposely. It's going to be fine. Then there's also the thing called burn test where you're looking for fabrics, which is essentially you're having this piece of mystery textile in your hand. You don't know what it is, but you want to know and find out. You just take it, you burn it, and the way it actually burns kind of tells you what it is. To everyone's surprise, a cellulosic fiber, which is pretty much similar to, or like essentially the same thing, to a piece of paper, does behave similarly to paper. Since the plants are over, we're now talking about animals. There's like two major groups, I would say. You have like the keratin-based ones, which is essentially just like hair and fur. You get wool from like sheep and similar animals, and they all behave quite similarly, I would argue, and you have silk. Now, if you actually read a tag and it says silk on there, it's going to be like silk from the domestic silk moth. There's other types of silk in like a botanical sense or like even a textile sense. Silk can be from any kind of like critter that actually spins a cocoon or something, or even spider, like spider webs are also considered to be silk. They're usually not in your clothing, and if they are, they will very, very, very much kind of like try to emphasize that because that's rare. And we also call other things silks, like sea silk, which is actually kind of like the food from business mollusk. So it's like a kind of like clammy, kind of like mollusk thing. That's not even a silk, but I digress. wool is also kind of like similarly processed or like easily processed, sorry. You have an animal with kind of like grown out enough hair. You start shearing it, you then start scouring it, which is like cleaning and kind of also like removing all of the like fats that are inside the wool itself. In that step really depends on what you want to do with it later and stuff. And then you start carding, or you usually start carding, which is the process where you also, once again, try to straighten out all the fibers and try to sort them. And once again, you can use it. The really cool thing about wool, and also like the maybe not so nice thing about wool in some cases, is if we look at the this figure, you can see that the root end, which is like where it's like the outer part, is like very kind of like rough and edgy. So it behaves similarly to Velcro. If you now go and agitate it with like water and heat, it's going to felt. It's essentially like Velcro sticking together, and because it's so small, you're not going to be able to kind of like unstick that. This is why if you do not take proper care of your wounds, they will be small and hard, and they're pretty much gone forever. You can try and salvage them a bit, but it's pretty much no turning back. On the other hand, it's pretty cool because like the outer layer is actually resistant, or like is actually hydrophobic, so it actually does not stay wet. The inner part, however, is actually very able to like absorb a lot of moisture. So wool actually stays pretty much completely dry outside, is actually able to like get a lot of water. And the even funnier part is if it absorbs water, there's actually this process where it actually gives off heat, which is pretty wild to me. So yeah, wool is actually pretty good at being resilient to pretty much everything, except it's not very strong and even weaker when wet, because once again, it's the same thing as here. It's the same thing for your hair as well. And the elasticity, however, can compensate. So it's a pretty decent textile and fiber at most things. Also really interesting, wool is self-extinguishing. So if you set it on fire, it will start to smolder and then be like, no, I don't want to do that, it's just gone. And once again, if you have wool ends, please consider actually taking care of them in a way that they will actually last. other than that, silk. Very easy process, but at the same time also kind of very gruel process. You have a silk moth, which you can see here. The silk moth becomes a pupa and actually spins a cocoon. You then take the cocoon and boil it alive. Sadly, yes, it's very bad. And then unravel the cocoon, but you're done with the fiber at least. At the same time, there's also this concept of peeves or Ahimsa silk, which it really depends on where you get it from, but it's essentially silk that promises to not harm them either by letting the larva actually fully develop and actually break free on their own, so they are allowed to become a butterfly or not. However, if you do want to have an ethical version, please actually look it up before buying anything, I would argue, because yeah, there's many things to be said about it. Now, we're pretty much done with the stuff that nature gives us and then ends up being sold to us. So let's talk about synthetics. There's pretty much just two big groups of synthetics used in clothing, which is petroleum-based and cellulose-based. And while the processes differ from like a chemical perspective, essentially just have some kind of like goo or liquid, which is then being extruded through spinnerets, which is essentially just this kind of like very small thing where you just extrude and like shoot out the liquid in either some kind of like other liquid or gas or air. Synthetic fibers that are petroleum based are pretty much everywhere, and they're like very cheap to make and very affordable. So that's why we use them a lot. They all have very similar properties because, again, they're all very similar from like a chemical perspective. They are all pretty durable. They are pretty good at like maintaining their appearance. And I would argue that like the biggest way where they differ is whether they are elastic or not, because all of them are also pretty bad at absorbing stuff, resisting the UV or sunlight, and yeah. There's also reasoning to be, like, there's actually scientific research proving that, yeah, your synthetic petroleum-based clothes do actually, yes, they do get smellier. But if that's a problem you're dealing with, try finding a detergent that is actually specifically made for, like, functional, kind of like sports clothes, tech, something where they usually have some more, I forgot the name, but they essentially have, like, some other stuff that helps with that. And cellulose-based fibers are essentially a goop you make out of cellulose, which most of the time is bamboo, or like bamboo is very popular for that, do not be fooled if these companies are like, oh my God, yes, there's like bamboo viscose, so good. No, it's just cellulose. It does not matter where the cellulose came from. Or like, even if it did matter, like it does significantly more from like an environmental point of view, and you actually do want your finished product to be just like indistinguishably cellulose. So do not fall for the marketing schemes. The texture varies actually highly. That's also the same for polyesters. And they're all very silky, they're high luster, very smooth. They are somewhat similar to silk, I would argue. And it was also kind of like what people tried to do back in the days, because they were like, oh, we can actually also try to do the same thing. Turns out it's not the exact same thing as the silk moth does, but it's similar enough, it works. And there's actually like two major groups, I would argue. You have acetates, which is one of the first fibers that actually ever got created synthetically. Unlike viscose or lyocell or other similar fibers, it's actually a cellulose ester, which means it's not the exact same thing. So it's, I would actually like to say something nice about this fiber, but it's not that durable. Like, it's really not good. It's very, very high maintenance. It essentially melts when you're ironing it too hard. It wrinkles by barely just like looking at it. When you get water states, like when it gets wet, there's like even more stuff with the hydrogen bonds going on, and it even wrinkles even more. That's also why something tells you it requires dry cleaning. You probably can dry it at home, but it's actually not going to end up very pleasantly. And it's really good at being white, but that's probably also the only thing. And according to some sources, I actually read that up to 75% of acetate that is being produced is actually used for cigarette filters. And I feel like that tells you a lot about the fiber itself. However, the good thing about the environmental factor is the solvent is very easy to reuse and is pretty much common practice, so at least one thing. On the other hand, you have viscose, also often called rayon, or lyocell, of which Chancellor is being a trademarked name. This is essentially just 100% cellulose. It's essentially some kind of like cellulose being dissolved, turning into a goop, and then you just express them into like, there's like varying ways of where you can do. And there, it's essentially the same chemical composition on a molecular level. However, the polymer chains and the way it crystallizes and everything differs, which once again is above what I'm actually understanding. However, I do have sources if you do understand the kind of stuff and want to learn more. The better crystalline structure is just in reference to it actually being a bit more durable and stuff. And the biggest way these textiles actually do differ is just in the way they're being created and how the process is, but more about that later because environment. Well, we've got the fibers, what do we do now? Spinning. What is spinning? Too grossly oversimplified, spinning is essentially just like taking filaments and twisting them together. You can imagine there's like many things you can do with that, but that's it. Important things you will hear are probably like S and Z twist, which is really just like one is slanted the other way, one is slanted one way, and it looks like it's either slanted like towards like the side where the S lands or the side where the Z lands, so yeah. And here you can actually see on the right side how it actually does look like. You will also find like very confusing names like, oh, twist per inches or like plies per something, or like funny names like tex or den. This is essentially just like all kind of like measurement system that people decided upon like one time. And if you're confused by it, just look it up. It's either saying like this weight per this amount of length or yeah, that's pretty much it. It's confusing. I also don't know all of them by heart. Weaving. So weaving is actually pretty complex, but at the same time, very simple. You can have like a lot of like variations with it. But at the same time, there's like very little to like actually describe it. You have the warp and weft thread, which in this case, the warp thread is the one going up to down or in blue, if you can see that. And the weft thread is the one going from left to right. Weft wide, and some people actually say they remember it because of beam me up, warp speed ahead, which I don't like, but still, I remember it, so maybe you might remember it as well. And there's just like main three weave patterns, which is simple weave, twill, and satin. The difference is simple weave has like one up, one down, one up, one down. Twill is about like 2 to 4, 5-ish up and down. And satin weave is, some might argue it starts at 5, some will say no, at 6 or 7. It doesn't really matter. It's just like one of a lot of time, like a very long length is being up, and then it goes back down again. This creates like a different structure, but it really does not matter what it's called. You just need to understand why it behaves a certain way. However, why should you care about this? Well, this actually is something that happens in real life as well. This is not the best example, however, I tried to come up with it. You probably are wearing your bracelet, or if you're not here, you're not wearing the bracelet. However, the bracelet is actually looking the same on both sides, except it's inverted. How can you do that? You have more strings going up and down. That's it. You just need to be creative with it. When you are buying fabric, however, there's a lot of names. And while they actually do matter, and I don't want to like just say like, oh no, your cultural practices don't matter, like they have their right to be named in a way. You do not need to know the name. It's only just really important that you understand what material is it made from, so what fiber is it made from, is that fiber suitable for what I wanted to do, what's the quality of the fiber, what type of fabric is it, as in like, is it the most thin fiber I can find, which I want for a winter coat, which is probably not a good idea, which also comes in that fabric count on weight, which is just a fancy way of saying there's so much of this thing on like an area. And one thing you actually need to take care of is grain, as for example, like fusion bobs. If your fabric is not a rectangular kind of like shape, and it's all being wonky, you might want to not buy that, or see if you can help somebody, like find somebody and help you tug on it and see if it straightens out. And also please take care if you find printed fabrics that has been printed on kind of also like skewed, because you can't really fix that, and the way you position your fabric will actually influence how the finished object behaves. Also honorable mentions, because I don't think a lot of people know about it, but I think more people would enjoy it if they did. Sprang, which has been practiced like all over the world and has different names, but that's kind of what the internet or like the majority of like also scientific publishing decided on calling it, is weaving. That's also kind of like similar to braiding, I would argue, because instead of having like warp and weft, so like the ones going up and down, left and right, you just have the ones up and down, and actually do with and actually just go ahead and weave with that. It's actually very stretchy, and you can make like very beautiful lace things, and I would argue probably a lot of people would enjoy wearing something out of that. And also tablet weaving, it's an easy way to like actually create very like intricate details or like imaging. And maybe you need a new belt, maybe your, I don't know, shoulder strap for something broke, maybe you want to make a lanyard. That's an easy way to do that. Now, knitting. Knitting is like the other like main type kind of fabric you can buy when you're looking for fabrics. And when you buy fabrics, there's the thing called weft knitting and warp knitting. Weft knitting is what like people do when they are knitting with needles and stuff. Warp knitting is something different. Knitting is essentially just like connected loops, where you hold up the loop above, which is called a stitch, with the one on top. And the main kind of way to like advance these loops and make new ones are knit and purl stitches. There's also a lot more specialized stitches as well, but essentially you just try and hold up the loop above, make new ones, maybe combine them together, and then you get like very beautiful fabric. This can be done by machines and people, and we're pretty good at that. Now, when you're buying fabric, you will probably see something that looks like this. This is stockinette stitch, for those who know. For those who don't know, it doesn't really matter. It probably looks like some kind of like V-shaped thing. If you do look at your t-shirt right now, you will probably see that this has like very, very tiny Vs. That's a knit fabric. This shirt, for example, is not knit fabric because it's not stretchy. We can do that with a lot of things, needles, of course, but also knitting machines. I found this picture on the internet. People actually do that. You can buy these things and make very cool things out of them. Or also loom knitting. Maybe you have like limited mobility or just don't like how like knitting with several needles feels. You might try this. Or just normal plain knitting with needles. And well, things about knitting, it unravels in letters, as you can see here. I willingly dropped this stitch up down so you can see. It kind of like creates this kind of like leathery thing, because if you remove the place that holds the first one up, the other one will fall down. And you can cut fabrics, but you need to be aware of that if you do think about it. So you just need to secure it first. But other than that, it's fine. And due to the fact of like how it's actually created and structured, it will always be stretchy, regardless of whether your fiber is stretchy or not. Warp knitting, like actual scientific publications will tell you, no, humans can't do that. They can. We have literal proof. It's just not done. It's more like, I can do that. See, I proved you wrong. That's it. It also looks very similar. It's mostly used for tricot, which is a fabric, not the kind of like, oh, sports, go team. Netting and Rochelle lace. It's not really important. If you see it, you will probably know, but that's like not one of the main kind of like things we do. Other yarn crafts, because there's so much more you can do. Crochet, for example, insanely popular. And the difference between like crochet and knitting is the loops, which is the stitches once again, are connected to the loops before, but not the ones below. It unravels stitch by stitch, and no machine to this day actually is replicated, because it's very difficult for machines, because you need to kind of like find the hole where you want to put it in. It's a bit less stretchy and more bumpy than knitting. That's sometimes exactly what you want, sometimes it's not what you want, but it's no less important. Braiding, very easy. You just kind of like, or, well, not very easy, very beautiful. You just kind of like take one strand, put it towards other strands, and you can either make like beautiful two-dimensional pieces or three-dimensional pieces. Get creative with that. Knotting, similar to braiding, except instead of like putting them around, you loop them around the string. You can make like very traditional pieces like this of Hanchang, or you can also make other quite traditional pieces like the macrame or like friendship bracelets, if any of you ever did that. That's also knotting. And there's just so many more things. Embroidery, we even had a talk about that. Sewing, felting, tatting, lace, knoll winding, anything really. If you can make it out of yarn, probably somebody did, and it's fine. Now to the last part of like actual fiber talk. Bleaching, dyeing, and printing. First and foremost, bleach is where you have something with color and remove the color. There's several types of bleach, and not all kinds of bleach will do the same thing. Dye adds the color by a chemical process, so it actually stays that way, more or less. And pigments are something that does not, I mean, it can stain, but it's actually not a chemical process that actually kind of like completely alters the structure and just sits sort of on top. There's like major dye classes. There's like far more dyes we can use. However, if you will be using like dyes at home, if you're dyeing wool, you probably will be using acid dyes. If you're like actually specifically try and go for wool. If you try and get into like dyeing cellulose fibers, it's probably fiber reactive dye. And if you go into like, oh, I want to do more natural kind of like dyeing, it's probably wardens. Indigo is a VAT dye. It's by far not the only one, but that's also a very common dye. So what's the difference between dyeing and printing? Well, one dyes, and the other also dyes. Dyeing is essentially anything that kind of just like stains it in a chemical way. Printing is when you use the dye to like applied in a very like structural manner. And pigment printing is where you have something like this year's shirt or like merchandise in general. You use the pigment inks, and it's just essentially like a goop which sticks to the fabric with color inside. And the thing about that is it's not good at like abrasive stuff because it's just on top. And once it's broken, it's not really coming back because So yeah, maybe also take care of your clothing if you want to like have it last as long as possible. And now to the very not fun part, because I felt like this needs to be said because this is a huge issue. The impact of the textile industries. bad, like really bad. The environmental impact is horrible. It's like an obscene amount of clothing and textiles being destroyed and burned all the time. Even if you like try and go like, oh, I'm recycling or like donating my clothes, that doesn't mean they're actually being properly recycled. The global annual plastic waste amount is like by 11%, just from clothing alone. There's just so many greenhouse emissions, water that is being used by like actually producing it, or like cotton fields that are just like growing, or like even bamboo fields, because we have like monocultures where we destroy like natural habitat because we want more and more and more. And also every time you wash your clothing and they contain plastic or like petroleum, or like are based from petroleum-based fibers, there's going to be microplastics. Also a very not fun fact, if the elastane or percentage of your clothing is above 5%, it will not be recycled at this point. Have not fun with that, sorry. There's also human and animals, and I feel like at this point it's probably important to say I am vegan, so your mileage may vary with how bad you think these things are, but there's like a lot of animal exploitation, there's horrible animal welfare things going on. Silk, you're literally boiling the animals alive. Also there's like this huge problem where in the wool industry you have mulesing, which is essentially a practice where you just cut off sheep's tails because we just bred them like this, so they are actually having more fur, but yeah. And also, please consider that everything you buy from like wool-related things, unless they actually promise you to like, oh, we are petting them to like death, they will sooner or later turn up into like being slaughtered because they're not profitable enough anymore. Toxic substances. There's a bunch of finishes. Flame retardants being used in clothing. There's this like big thing where airline people actually had clothes with a flame retardant formaldehyde, which is known to us now that's very unhealthy. Other mystery chemicals, because we don't really know what's going on. Endocrine disruptors, and God knows what else. And also, workers' rights exploitations is also really bad. This is where the very unfun part about viscose comes in. Viscose uses carbon disulfate, which is very highly toxic and just very not good to work with. Most of the workers do not have like appropriate PPE or like even working conditions up to like actual literal slavery. There's a lot of child labor, and despite many big companies promising us, oh no, we will do better, we care about the children, there's still a lot of child labor going on, and it's just overall not good. And I know we all need to like wear clothes, but also please consider reduce, reuse, recycle, please mend your clothes, please consider if you really need to like have that highly plastic containing clothing, not because it's bad, but because it's polluting the environment. So yeah. I want to learn more, where can I do that? Go to your local library. Libraries are great. Mine has so many books about textile crafts in general. Go to your like textile related club or meetup. There's many nice people being interested in it. Other talks from previous year, even this year, actually. People on the internet like talking about textiles. Also, just go and try and practice things. They don't have to be good. You will not be good at this when you first try it, but you still should. And these are some books I also really found helpful. One is Textiles by Sarah Jane Cadoff and Sarah B. Marchetti, the 12th edition, to be precise. I think this is a great textbook because it has a lot of like options and like tells you a lot of things and has a lot of like tables and illustrations. I really like that one. If you want to read the unfun parts about how it's not good, maybe consider To Die For and how toxic fashion is making us sick. And if you want to like go, oh, I want to go into like sewing, I really like the old Reader Digest Complete Guide to Sewing books. They're pretty extensive, but also at the same time, just look things up, try them out, talk to the people, and just go for it, really. Also, if you have questions, please feel free to come up to me or like anything. I'm very happy to talk about textiles. So yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much. I'm so impressed how you fit everything into these 40 minutes. And I suppose we now have a lot of questions, and we only have 5 minutes left, so you will need to take them all to the outside world as well. But microphone number one, please.
Hi, thank you so much. So I was wondering, what are some good non-animal sourced fibers for crafting, like knitting, etc.?
So I personally really enjoy knitting. The pictures of, wait, hold on, I can go back and show you. Yeah, this is currently a sweater I'm working on. I have it with me right now. Well, not here, but like at my place. This is mercerized cotton. I really work a lot with mercerized cotton. A lot of people online will tell you, oh no, you can't use cotton. It's not elastic or anything. You can. I have like very beautiful like cotton knit pieces from my grandma that are probably like 20 to 30 years old by now, and they hold up beautifully. And yeah, like the structural integrity and like the kind of like main thing, how the fiber behaves will differ, but at the same time, you can just use anything really. It will just end up being differently. So if you end up being like, oh, I want to make this like very popular pattern which is made for like mohair, for example, which for us who don't know, is like a very thin, kind of like very voluminous animal fiber. If you want to replicate that with cotton, it's not going to look good. But at the same time, I personally feel like it's the best to like try and see what can I do with my options. Also, other plant fibers exist. I know they're hard to get, they're expensive. But at the same time, maybe see if you can actually find something. And also if you're looking for cotton yarns, which is just something I do a lot, look at how they're like twisted and plied and spun. Because most cotton yarn is actually like very kind of like strongly twisted together, so they're like very like compressed. But there's also some yarns that are like very airy and kind of like more fluffy, which are more similar to how wool behaves in the kind of like the optical kind of like spongy-ish kind of way. But it's really just, it's mostly just like looking online what other people do, seeing what your local yarn store maybe has an offer, even an online shop. And also maybe considering what you can do with what is available, but yeah.
Thank you so much. Do we have a question from the Signal Angel? Okay, great. Then microphone number three, please.
So to add on the question of what materials will vegans choose, I have a question. What would you do if you wanted something like thermoregulation of wool? Because, well, I'm not a vegan, and for me, wearing something woolen in winter is a game changer. So given that, like, I don't want a cotton sweater that is, dealing with heat and humidity the way plant fibers do. So I wonder what would be your answer to that? Like, it's totally in good faith, and also, yeah. What about felting? Like, for example, the very popular felted slippers pattern and stuff like that. I came with a felted hat. So what would a vegan do if they wanted this felted effect?
So what I basically do, I think this is a good question, by the way. So you will not get a cellulose fiber to behave like a plant fiber. This is just not how this works. Chemistry and physics is against you in this one. What you can do, however, is consider your options. I personally own woolen pieces of clothing. For example, my winter coat is made out of 100% wool and 100% viscose. It is thrifted, however. I personally just don't buy anything new. And whenever I thrift, I really look at what is it, why am I buying it, and is this like a good way to like buy something, or is it maybe somebody reselling or trying to like maybe promote, like, oh, this is that fiber, so please buy this for that reason. But I feel like that really depends. However, thrifting is great. Please thrift more. You can also thrift or like buy old people like yarn stashes. And for felting, you can absolutely felt with like pretty much any fiber. Wool is just really good at felting because it's kind of like, again, it's this kind of like outer layer which behaves a bit like Velcro. So it sticks easily very together, sticks together very easily. But if you actually wanted to have like some felted pieces of clothing, you could not felt like, or like knit big slippers or crochet them and then throw them into the washing machine and be like, yeah, this is going to do the job for me. Sadly, it does not work that way. You can, however, felt cotton or like any other fiber. I personally have no experience with felting of other than wool in like elementary school myself, so take this with a grain of salt. I did, however, do look into it a bit before actually even doing this talk. So it's possible your mileage may vary, but also at the same time, try to understand how the process works. So for example, if you actually wanted to like have felted slippers, you would have to dry felt them and like needle felt them, unlike wool, which you can usually wet felt, or is like the most common way to get a felted slipper. But yeah, if you want resources, I think either my search history will probably still have some of the links and papers I did look at, but they're mostly just about animal fibers, so yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Linus. That's so interesting. Where can people find you to talk more with you?
You can probably find me sitting around at the A assembly, as that's like A, the first letter of the alphabet 12 times. That's your strain assembly. They're very funny people. It's an alliteration. Or just around, or like my nicks, Octoprog, pretty much everywhere I exist. So if you do see me, that's probably me. Feel free to come up to me or just send me a message. Feel free to even send me a chaos post. I think answering it will be a bit difficult, but at the same time, just contact me which, however you would like. So yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much again. And this is your applause again.